Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Gimel Amud Bet. Yesterday we discussed the machloka between Abaye and Rava with regards to the size of the amot. Abaye said in the name of Nachman that the amah of the sukkah and the amah of the mavui were amot that were measured based on a 5 tefach amah, whereas the amah of the kilayim was measured on a 6 tefach amah. Rava, on the other hand, in the name of Nachman, says that all the amot are measured as 6 tefachim amot. Just there are different types of tefachim. There's a tefach, which is a tefach mitzumtzam, or a tefach atzevot, that is a sad tefach, a closed tefach, where the fingers are tightly together. And there's a tefach, which is sochakot, the laughing, happy, spread out finger tefach, which is wider. So they're all done based on a 6 tefach amah. It's just a question of what type of tefach within that amah that you're getting. Both of them agree that in each instance it's the Chumrah. So for Abaye, Sukkah and Mavoi use the 5 tefach amah, and Kilayim uses the 6 tefach amah. For Rava, it would be the equivalent that Sukkah and Mavoi would use the tefach that's mitzumtam, whereas 6 tefachim of tefachim mitzumtamim, whereas Kilayim would use a 6 tefach that was spread out. So in both cases, it'll turn out to be the Chumrah. It's just a question of what type of amah that we're looking at here. So meitevei, kol amot shamru chachamim ba'ama bat shisha, b'vat shelo yehu mikuvanot. All the amot that the chachamim discussed are 6 tefach amot. Just, they're not all equal. Now that sounds, bishlam al d'rova, sounds exactly like Rava. Kehechi d'havien halalu sochakot, v'halalu atzevot. That some of them are happy, laughing, spread out tefachim, and others are the mitzumtzamim, the tight, sad tefachim. Ela le'abaye, according to Abaye, kasho. That's a problem, because Abaye doesn't say all amot have 6 tefachim. He says some amot have 6 tefachim, and some amot have 5 tefachim. So amar lecho Abaye, ema, it should read like this, amat kilayim bama bat shisha. All amot that we discuss with kilayim are always 6 tefach amot. I said, well, that's difficult. V'hamiktani seifa. In the latter half of that braita, it says, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, kol amot shamru chachamim b'kilayim. All the amot that are discussed in kilayim by the chachamim are ba'ama bat shisha, are an ama of 6 tefachim. Uvaj lo yehu mitzumtzamot. As long as they're not the tight 6 tefachim amot, but rather the wider 6 tefachim amot, because that'll give you the greatest chumrah. Michlau, from the fact that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that we're specifically speaking about Kilayim, there we can infer that the Tanakhama was not speaking about Kilayim exclusively, but rather Kol Amot Ke'amar. He's talking about any Ama. So Amalek Abaye, Abaye says, okay, I'm not sure what the issue here is at all. V'lav mi'ika Rabbi Shimon Gamliel de'kai kavati. Wait a minute, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says exactly what I say, which is that the Ama having a 6 tefach Ama is only applicable by Kilayim. So I can subscribe to the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Ana d'amrik Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So Gemara says, le'baye vadai tanaehi. That the machloket here between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is for sure a machloket tanaim. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is not coming to qualify the statement of the Tanakhama, but rather argue on the Tanakhama. Because Abaye wants to subscribe to the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which is differentiated from the Tanakhama. Tanakhama says, all amot are 6 tefachim amot. Whereas Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says only Kilayim has this 6 tefach amah. On the other hand, the Rova, mi leima tanayehi. Who says according to Rova that this has to be a machloket tanaim? Rather, we could say that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is qualifying, explaining the position of Tanakhama. Amalek Rova, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel ha ato liyashmeina. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is coming to teach us, amat Kilayim lo yim tzamtzeim. That all the amot are 6 tefachim amot. Now we said some are big, some are small. So long comes Rabbi Shimon Gamliel to tell us which one of those is the bigger ones, the ones that use the spread out fingers for. That is the Amah of Kilayim lo yitzamtzeim. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, if that's what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was coming to do, Balema Amat Kilayim lo yitzamtzeim, then say exactly that. That the Amah of the Kilayim, you should not make it tight, but rather spread out. Why does he frame it as that the only thing that has a Kilayim, only thing that has an Amah bat shishat fachim is Kilayim? The fact that he expressed it as being that this is an amah of 6 tefachim indicates that there are things that he thinks that doesn't have an amah of 6 tefachim. My love, the mute amat sukkah v'amat mavui, comes to exclude the sukkah and the mavui, which means that he's arguing on the Tanakama, and for Rav would also be a machloka tanaim. The Gemara says, no. The mute ama yisod v'ama soviv, comes to exclude the ama of the base of the mizbeach, as well as the ama of the walkway around the mizbeach. Those are made up of amot that are 5 tvachim, but otherwise everything else is made up of amot that are 6 tvachim. Tichtiv, we have a pasuk here from Yechezkel. It's actually a three-way machloket, how to read the pasuk. They all come to the same conclusion, but it's just a question of pshat in the pasuk, how to read it. First, read it according to Rashi, which is, ve'elu midot ha-mizbeach. These are the dimensions of the mizbeach. Be'amot, the amot that we are using for the mizbeach are ama, ama v'tofach. That ama that we're using for the amot ha-mizbeach, you would have to get to a normal ama which is 6 tvachim. You would have to take an ama plus a tefach to get to that, which implies that the ama that we're speaking about here is 5 tvachim. So Rashi says here, the amot that we're about to discuss are constituted of amot that if they were compared against a regular ama, an ama benoni, which is a 6 tefach ama, they would require an ama vitofach. They require an ama plus a tefach, which means 5 plus 1 to get to 6. V'chek ha'ama, and you have the chek, which is has that ama. V'ama rochav, and you have an ama of width. Ugvula el sfata saviv, on the border around. Zeret ha'echad, v'ze gav ha'mizbeach. A half an ama, and this is the top of the mizbeach. Now the Gemara is going to darshan the pasuk. Chek ha'ama, the chek that we're referring to here, ze yisod. That's referring to the yisod ha'mizbeach. So the Yisod Mizbeach has one of these amot, these 5 tefachim amot, is found in the Yisod. And as Rashi explains, that the Chek is the Yisod, or the foundation of the Mizbeach, because Hashem Shu Chikuyav V'Tikuno Shu Mizbeach Milamato. It is the structure and the base of the Mizbeach on the bottom. So that's why it's called the Chek. V'ama Rochav, the ama in width, Ze Sovev. That talks about the walkway around by the Kohanim. That is also 5 tvachim. Ugvula el sfatas faviv. And the border that is around it, elu hakranot. That refers to the karnot. Those are the 4 karnot, which on the top of the mizbeach, the 4 corners of the mizbeach, which are an ama cubed on the edges of the mizbeach. That ama is made up of a zeret ha'echad. Zeret is a half an ama. And as Rashi says, if you go to the middle of the keren, and you take a zeret in each direction, that will give you an ama by an ama cubed. And lastly is, zeh gav ha-mizbeach, zeh mizbeach ha-zahav. This is referring to the mizbeach ha-zahav, or to the mizbeach ha-pnimi. So now we have here the midot ha-mizbeach, and in the midot ha-mizbeach, it gives 3 exceptions to the rule of the regular ama. All the amot here are amot of 6 tefachim, but there are 3 exceptions to that where the ama is 5 tefachim on the mizbeach. One of them is the height of the yisod. The other one is the indentation of the sovev. And the third one is the keren, is the corner of the mizbeach, which is 5 high, and then it could be 5 deep or even 6 deep. That doesn't really matter, but we'll assume that it's 5 by 5 tefachim cubed. So based on that, you now get the dimensions of the Mizbeach, but there are parts of the Mizbeach whose dimensions are 5 tefachim. So the height of the Yisod is 5 tefachim, which is 1 amah high, the Yisod. Then the Mizbeach indents an amah. That amah that indents is a regular amah of 6 tefachim. Then the Mizbeach rises another 5 amot. Those 5 amot that rises are 6 tefachim amot, or 30 tefachim. Then the Mizbeach indents again an amah. That's the Amata Sovev. The Amata Sovev is 5 of Tvachim of indentation. That's what it's meant by Rochav, that the width of that Sovev is 5 Tvachim. Then the Mizbeach rises an additional 3 Amot that are made up of 6 Tvachim Amot, which will get you to the 9 Amot on the Mizbeach. And then the top Amah, which is the Keren, is made up of a 5 Tefach Amah. If you do that, then the height of the Mizbeach is 58 Tvachim. 58 Tvachim divided in half is 29 Tvachim. 29 tefachim will give you the midpoint of the mizbeach, or the chut ha-sikra, the dividing line of the upper and lower halves of the mizbeach, which makes a difference where the blood is placed, if it has to be above or below. And that chutei sikra sits a tef, an ama below the soveiv. Sits six tvachim below the soveiv, and that'll be the midpoint. So that's the explanation of this pasuk. Just to note that Tosafot reads the pasuk in the following manner. That when it says, ve'elu midot ha-mizbeach be'amot, it's talking about amot, she'amash lehem hi ama v'tefach. When we're talking about the amot here, we're talking about an ama, which is six tvachim. How do I know that? Because the ama is defined by the ama v'tofach. The ama v'tofach is the definition of an ama here, which means that it's a six tvachim, six tefach ama. Then the pasuk says, v'cheik, v'vachiluk, and says that the following amot do not conform to that type of ama. And they are the five tvachim amot. Where is the ama of six tvachim used? Is in the later psukim, where it talks about the mizbeach itself, the width and length of the top of the mizbeach. Over there it mentions amot again. That is defined by this elu midot mizbeach v'amot, that the ama that we talk about here by the mizbeach is an ama v'tofach, means six tvachim amot, with the exception of the following items that are enumerated afterwards in the pasuk. One of his questions on Rashi, and one of his criticisms on Rashi's Pshat, is that the v'cheik is a vavachiluk. And therefore, if Rashi says that the first part of the pasuk is telling you that the amot used in the mizbeach are five tvachim amot, it shouldn't have said v'cheik as a vavachiluk. It should have said cheik ha'ama, that just should have continued inward because it's the same ama that was defined above. That's the way Tosafot reads it. The Gro'a brings the Tosefta and actually reads it a third way, which is Velo v'deit ha-mizbeach be'amot. These are the dimensions of the mizbeach and amot. Ama, ama v'tofach. There are two different types of amot there. There's an ama that is a five tefach ama, and there's also an ama that is a six tefach ama. Which of those are the five tefachim amot? That's v'chega ama. So on and so forth at the end of this pasuk. And then the subsequent pasukim, it tells us about the amot that were six tefachim. So there are three different ways to read the pasuk, but all come to the same conclusion that the Mizbeach has contained within it certain amot that are five tefachim, and those are what are excluded by Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's statement that Kilayim has a six tefach ama, not these couple of instances by the Mizbeach where it's a five tefach ama, but otherwise everything else, he agrees with the Tanakama, has a six tefach ama. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is coming to qualify or define what the Tanakama says, that when do we use the bigger six tefach ama is by kilayim. Okay, the Gemara now continues. Amar b'chir barashi amarav. Shi'urim chatzitzim u'michitzim halacha l'moshe misinai. These three areas of halacha are actually halachot that we got b'misora from Moshe Rabbeinu misinai. So they have a Torah-like din to them, but they are passed down orally, not written in the Torah explicitly. And that is shiurim, all things dealing with sizes of items. That's whether sizes for punishments, sizes to be yotzei, sizes for tumah, all of those were passed down. Halacha l'Moshe misinai. Chatzitzim, the fact that when you go to the mikveh, what is considered to be a chatzitza, what's considered to be a problem, that it blocks the meha mikveh from touching the body. Umichitzin, all the dinim of michitza. What is the height of a michitza? And how does a michitza function? All of those are halacha l'Moshe misinai. The Gemara is now going to challenge each one of them and say, wait, aren't they explicit in the Torah? Which is shiurim d'oraitohu. Shiurim are found explicitly in the Torah, dichtiv. Because the pasuk says, eretz, chita, visora, v'chulei. The pasuk says, in describing the uniqueness of Eretz Yisrael, it gives all of these items that are unique, the seven species that are unique to Eretz Yisrael. V'ram Rav Chanan, kol pasuk hazeh, the shiurim ne'amar. The reason that the pasuk talks about these seven items is because these seven items have significance halachically. That is chita. Chita has a significance. Look at that. The Mishnah in Negaim. Hanichnas lebeit hamnuga mekelav al ktefav. Person who enters into a house that has Negaim, that has leprosy in it, the person who enters into the house, it then becomes tamei. Now, if he brings in items with him, items that he's not wearing, they also become a tamei immediately, like he does upon entering the house. And therefore, a person who enters into a house, and his clothing is on his shoulder, and v'sandalav v'tabutav b'yado, and he's carrying his shoes and his rings, hu v'heim tamei miyad, become tamei immediately upon entering into the house that has negaim, because the house that has negaim is tamei be'ohel, like a mate. And therefore, when you enter, you become tamei immediately. Heya levush kelav v'sandalav b'raglav. If he's wearing his clothing, and he had his shoes on his feet, V'tabotav v'etzbotav, and his rings were on his fingers. Hu tamei miyad. He, upon entering, becomes tamei immediately. V'hein torin achi shaheb g'dei achidat pras. And he will, the clothing that he's wearing, all the items that he is wearing, will not become tamei until the amount of time it takes to eat half a loaf. Now this halacha derives from the fact that the pasuk says in the Torah, va'ochel b'bayit yichabes et bigadav. The one who eats in the house has to launder his clothing. And the Midrash halacha darshins from this pasuk, it's not literally that you have to eat in the house, because the person comes to me immediately upon entering. So ochel is the amount of time that one has to wait or stay in the house in order for his clothing to also become tamei if he's wearing the clothing. So that definition, what does it mean to stay there the amount of time you have to eat? So the amount of time you have to eat is kedei achilat pras, the amount of time it takes to eat half a loaf, as Rashi here says that half a loaf of bread is dalet beitzim, 4 eggs worth, which is the mazon suda benonit, is the amount that you need for a regular meal. That a whole loaf has 8 beitzim, which is enough for 2 sudot. So half a loaf is enough for 1 suda, is 4 beitzim. The Rambam disagrees and says that a whole loaf is 6 beitzim, which is for 2 meals, and then 3 beitzim are half a loaf. Pat chitim, it has to be wheat bread, velo pat seorim, and not barley bread. Mesav veochel, he has to be laying down on the couch the way that they ate in their day and eating. Bilift ochel biliftan, and eaten with some sort of condiment or accompaniment that makes it easier to eat. All of these things make it more expedient to finish the meal, because patritim, wheat bread, is easier to eat than barley bread. Mesav ochel, if you are laying down in the normal way that they used to eat versus walking, it's easier to eat or faster to eat. And biliftan, if it has some sort of condiment or accompaniment with it, it also goes down faster. So the amount of time for one's clothing to become tamei once he's entered the house that has a nega in it, that person's clothing that he's wearing will become tamei if he waits the amount of time it takes to consume this item. This item is defined by pat chitim. That's what it means in the pasuk. Chita is a definition of a shiur. Si'ora. That's not. You have a mishnah in olot. Etzim ki si'ora. If you have a bone the size of a barley seed, has no basar, has no flesh on it. Mitamei b'magau masa. It is mitamei by touch and by carrying it. Veinu mitamei boel. But it is not mitamei boel. You need a kazayit basar, or you need a limb, a full limb, whatever it is that makes it tamei boel. You need the rov binyan. You have to have the majority of the number of bones in the body, the majority of the structure of the body, in order to be mitamei boel. But a single bone fracture, bone piece, that is the size of a se'ora, it will not be mitamei bohel. It will not be mitamei if one goes into a house with that same item in the house. But if one comes into contact with such an item, or one carries such an item, then they will become tamei. And that's the se'ora. The se'ora, the barley seed, gives us the definition for the size of a bone that is mitamei. Gefen. By gefen is kedei revi'it yayin lenazir. The amount of a revi'it yayin that a nazir must consume, drink, in order to be mekabel malkot, according to Rashi. Rashi says here, if he drinks a revi'it worth of yayin, then he will be chayav malkot. And that is where the gefen comes from. The gefen teaches us that revi'it yayin is the shi'ur for the nazir to be chayav. Tosafot does not like Rashi's interpretation because it differs from all the other cases. In all the other cases, it was not the item itself, meaning that the gefen itself was not what you ate or drank. It rather gave definition to the shi'ur. So too over here, we don't want it to say that he's drinking wine, but rather giving a shi'ur a revi'it yayin. And therefore, Tosafot offers up 2 possibilities of alternatives to Rashi's interpretation. And both of them, there are issues with. It's not so simple. And in the end, Rashi's interpretation might be the simplest of them all, which is, number one, it says is rather that if you ate solid items, not grapes, juice, or wine, where it was a liquid, the solid items that come from the vine, that includes the seeds, the shoots of the vine, which are all asurim, or grapes themselves that he eats, which a nazir may not consume any of these items. If he eats those items, how do we measure the quantity for him to be chayav? So Tosafot suggests that the quantity is measured by revi'it yayin, by displacement. If you put these items into a cup of wine, the amount of wine that is displaced from them being put in must be revi'it yayin in order for you to be chayav. Now, that is special because wine is different than water. Wine has a higher surface tension than water, and therefore it's harder to displace than water. So therefore, if you put these items in, it would take more of these items to make up a revi'it of yayin than it would if you used water. That's one interpretation that Tosafot gives. Rabbeinu Tam offers another interpretation, which is that the girsan or gemara should be that gefen, how much of the gefen, how much do you have to consume? Kedei kezayit yayin le-nazir. What I have to do is a kezayit's worth of wine for the nazir. That you take wine and you put a zayit in there, and if you take the items that are solid items and you place them into the wine and they displace the same amount as a kezayit, that would be the measurement of the solid items that you have to eat. Tosafot has an issue with that because there it should make no difference if it's wine or water. As long as you're consistent in the liquid that you use, you will always displace the same amount that when you put in the kezayit and the solid items because you're measuring with the same liquid for both items. Therefore, Tosafot doesn't love that pshat. And then, in the end, he favors Rashi's pshat over here about using the revi'at yayin for the nazir as the measuring stick for how much he would be chayav in order to get malkot. Teina, the fig, krugro geret lotzat shabbat. We just finished Masechet Shabbat. Masechet Shabbat, we know kololu chlim, anything that is food, in order to be chayav for carrying it on Shabbat from Rishut Yachid to Rishut Rabim, Rishut Rabim, Rishut Yachid, or Dada Mob Rishut Rabim, has to be the size of a krugro geret, which is a dried fig. Rimon, the pomegranate, kiditnan. We have a Mishnah called Glei Bale Batim Shiran Kirimoni. The amount of a hole that you need inside of a utensil of a balabayit in order for it to no longer be considered a kli is the size of a rimon, the size of a pomegranate. So we actually saw this in the Gemara and Shabbat. The Gemara and Shabbat discussed this extensively on Daf Kuf Bet and Kuf Yud Bet. Rashi thinks that it might apply to kli cheres too, earthenware utensils as well, and that's what it sounds like from the Gemara and Shabbat. Although Tosafot thinks that the Mishnah itself is discussing wooden utensils, and it will only apply to a kli cheres if one designates the kli cheres to be used for such an item. In either instance, what the Mishnah is teaching us over here is that a keli that is still functional still is mekabel tuma. And when is it functional? Well, if it can still be used. So therefore, by a clay balabait, we're not talking about those of craftsmen, those of people that are selling them, because once they have a hole in them, you can't sell them or they won't utilize them. But home wares, where a person will use them, if he can't use it for this, so use it for the next thing because he doesn't want to throw it out. He doesn't want to waste his money. So therefore, if it has a hole in it the size of a zayit, of an olive size, he won't put olives in there anymore, but he'll use nuts and put nuts in there. If the hole is the size of a nut, then he won't use it for nuts anymore. He'll use it for rimonim, for pomegranates. I mean, that person will keep graduating the size of the object that he keeps inside of the utensil in order to be able to utilize the utensil despite the hole in it. Once it reaches a rimon, the size of a hole of a rimon, then that's the largest fruit that was common in their time. And therefore, it's no longer useful anymore, and that would not be considered a kli anymore. So rimon is that threshold for the size of a hole. If a rimon can pass through that hole, then it's no longer useful for a balabait, and it loses its shame kli. Tosafot points out that in other places it mentions that you have to have gimel together. You have to have three rimonim together, which sounds like you'd have to have a hole the size of three rimonim, which is not consistent with our gemara over here, as well as the gemara in Shabbat. So in the end, Tosafot says, no, maybe it means that you have three rimonim that are on one branch, and they exit one by one. They have to exit from there one by one, but the fact that they're attached needs a little more room to get them out. That's one possibility. Or he says that the Mishnah is giving you a definition of what size rimon. It should be a size of rimon where three to go together on a single branch or a single extension, because that'll give you medium-sized rimonim, not the ones where there's one or two, which will be very big rimonim, and one that is four or five, which are small rimonim. I'm trying to give you the size of rimon that we're discussing here. It's one that grows three together in a unit. Eretz Zeit Shemen. It continues now with the olives. Eretz Shekoshi Ureha Kizeitim. It's a land in which all the shurim are defined by a kezayit, by an olive. It says Koshi Ureha, all the measurements. Salkadatcha, how can you say this? Vayika ani damran. We just had a whole list of measurements that are not governed by a kezayit. Ela ema eretz shirov shiurei kezayitim. A land in which the majority of the measurements are governed by a kezayit, or the size of a kezayit. Divash. Divash that we're talking about here is talking about divash timarim, the divash of dates. That's what Rashi says, called Dvash Hamur Batorah, Dvash Tmarim. Any honey that is mentioned in the Torah is the honey of dates. There are those that disagree, not here, everybody here agrees that we're talking about the honey of dates, but when the Torah says Eretz Zeit Shemen Udvash, over there there's some Eretz Chalav Udvash, and the pasuk says Eretz Chalav Udvash, there's some over there that want to suggest that that dvash is dvash shel dvorim, as distinct from the dvash over here. Rashi believes that all dvash that is mentioned in the Torah is the dvash of dates. So here, this dvash, kikol devet hagasad yom kippurim, that is measured for the date, the size of a fat date for Yom Kippur. The Gemara in Yoma tells us that a fat date is the size or amount of food that one must consume on Yom Kippurim to be satiated in some way, and that would be a violation of the inui requirement on Yom Kippur. The achila and shtia, the isur of eating and drinking on Yom Kippur, is defined by inui. It has to be an affliction. So in order to be in violation of not keeping the inui, you would have to remove the inui. Chachamim determined that removing the inui with solid foods would be the amount of ketovet agasa, of a fat date. That would be the amount of food you consume that would take away some of the inui of Yom Kippurim. So therefore, the tamar, the date, is used to measure the amount of food one consumes on Yom Kippur. Mar says, Betizbira shirim michtav teve. Wait a minute. Your question is, isn't this written in the Torah? Why are you telling me it's halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim? Well, guess what? It's not really written in the Torah either. All you have in the Torah and the pasuk is a list of fruits and grains that are the seven species of Eretz Yisrael. Even if you're looking at what you defined over here, you had to interpret each one of them to give us an halacha. So that's not explicitly written in the Torah. Hela hilchata ninhu. The truth is that they really are a halacha, the Moshe Mitzrayim. Basmechinu Rabbanan akrai. And the Rabbanan connected them to the pasuk, or the lashon in the Gemara in Brachot is kra asmachto me'alma, that the pasuk is simply an asmachto, that they're using the pasuk to hint to that which is true in the halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim, but that's not where the main derivation of the halacha is. The main derivation of the halacha is that we have halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim, and just connected to it. The Tosafot mentions, and so does the Mesoros HaShas, that the Girsa in other places is somewhat different. And in some of the places, the Gemara ends with that they are really dinei derabbanan, v'smichinu rabbanan akrai, that these are really dinei derabbanan, and that they were connected to the pasuk, but they're not really deoraita. But the halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim tells us these shiurim according to our Gemara here. Now the Gemara moves on to the next thing, chatzitzin. Is it really true that chatzitzim are halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim? Chatzitzim deoraita ninu? Chatzitzim come from the Torah, dichtiv, because we have a pasuk in the Torah that says, v'rachatz b'mayim et kol b'saro. What does that mean, v'rachatz b'mayim et kol b'saro? Shlo yedavar chutzetz b'msaro l'mayim. Because his basar has to be in the mayim. It means there can be nothing between his skin and the water. B'mayim, what does it mean, b'mayim? B'mei mikveh. That can be in water that is collected. It doesn't have to be mayim chayim. It doesn't have to be a live spring. Because here it doesn't define as mayim chayim, just says b'mayim. Kol b'saro b'mayim. What does it mean, kol? That entire body fits into that water body. So that's what is defined as a mikveh. Kamahein, what is that? How much water do you need for the entire body of an individual to be in? Ama al ama barom gimel amot. It's being ama wide by ama long, by 3 amot high. Mishirua chachamim me mikveh memsa. That the amount of water that fits into an ama by ama by 3 amot is 40 sa'ah. 40 sa'ah is sufficient water for the entire body of an individual to be covered in water, according to the Chachamim. We discussed this a little bit back in the Gemara in Shabbat about the height of an individual. Over here, it sounds like people were 3 amot high. Tosafot over there says that gimel amot is only until the shoulders, that either the person bends his head down, or the displacement of the water from him entering into the mikveh will then cause the water to rise above his shoulders and cover his head as well. So here we see that we have a pasuk teaching us the din of chatzitza. Where it says, no, ki itzriach hilchuta lisa'aro. The reason that we need the halacha of the Moshe Mitzrayim is for se'ar. Ukidirabba barabhuna. Like the halacha of Rabba barabhuna, dama Rabba barabhuna, nema achat kshura chotzet. If you have a single strand of hair that is tied or knotted, then it's a chatzitza, because that can make into a very tight knot, and the tight knot will prevent the water from entering. Shalosh, if you have 3 hairs together that are tied together or tied with other hair, einan chutzotzot. That's not a problem of a chatzitza, because You can never tie them tight. Due to the thickness of the three hairs together, the knot will never be tight enough, not allow the water in. Shtayim, eni yodea. Even two, I'm not sure about. I don't know which side that goes to. I have a safek about two hairs, whether it's tight or it's loose enough. So Gemara says, Saro, nami do raitu. Saro, we don't need the halacha Moshe Mitzinai. That's in the pasuk as well, the Tanya. Because the pasuk says, Virachatz b'mayim et kol b'saro. Kol b'saro comes et kol b'saro, the et hatafel b'saro. It means things that are even subordinate to his skin. V'zehu se'ar, and that refers to the hair. So you see that there can't be any chatzitzot by the hair. So that's already defined in the Torah. So kri'ata hilchuta, the rubo ulumiyuto ulumakpid ulsheinu makpid ukedrabi Yitzchak. L'acha Moshe Mitzinai comes to teach us what is the din of chatzitza. When is something classified as a chatzitza? And when is something not classified as a chatzitza? Rashi over here says Halacha Moshe Mitzinai is referring to hair. This is a chatzitza by hair. Tosafot disagrees with Rashi and says that the chatzitza that we're speaking about here is talking about gufo, about his body, and not necessarily se'aro. Dam Rav Yitzchak, Dvar Torah. Dvar Torah doesn't mean literally mina Torah midoraita, but rather Dvar Torah means Halacha, the Moshe Mitzinai, as Rashi says, that the Dvar Torah here means Halacha Moshe Mitzinai b'Torah shebal peh. Doesn't mean Torah literally written in the Torah, but like the oral tradition that is considered to be Torah, Halacha Moshe Mitzinai. And therefore, when you have rubo, the majority, according to Rashi, of the hair, according to Tosafot, the body, is covered by this item, umakpid alav, and he doesn't want it to be there. He plans on washing it off. It bothers him. It's something that he's not going to keep there. Then chutzeitz. It's chutzeitz mi deoraita. If you're missing any of these items, then it's no longer a din deoraita. It's no longer a din halacha l'moshe misinai of chatzitza. And therefore, v'sheinu makpid alav, enu chutzeitz. And if he doesn't care about it, then it's not chutzeitz, even if it covers the robe of his body. Gazru al rubo, sheinu makpid, mishum robo amakpid. Then there's an additional gzera of chachamim. This is not the halacha l'moshe misinai anymore, but the gzera de rabbanan. That if something covers the robe of a person's body, even though he doesn't care about it, that it's still a problem of chatzitza, because we worry about the case where he is makpid on it. If he has something that does not cover the robe of his body, but he cares about it and he wants to wash it off, that is also a chatzitza midrabanan, because we worry about mishum rubo hamakpid. We worry about the case where you have the other item. So in a case where you have rubo, it covers the robe of the body or the hair according to Rashi, and you makpid and you care about removing it, then everybody agrees that's halacha on the Moshe Mitzinai. In a case where you have one of those two items, there's a gzera derabanan, not that is a chatzitza, not to leave it, because we're afraid that if you get the other item, then it would be problematic. Now the Gemara asks about the fourth permutation. Why don't you also go there on the fourth permutation, which is it's not the robe, and he doesn't care about it either, mishum miuto hamakpid, because maybe he'll, because of the issue of miut, when it's not the whole, but he is makpid on it, or ina mishum rubo, if it covers the robe of his body, but he's not makpid. It's only one step away from the other items. It says, I don't understand that. He gufa gzera, but not nikumu nikzor gzera the gzera. It itself is gzera. I mean, the fact is that there's only one din, halacha l'moshe Mitzinai, which is rubo and makpid. Where you're missing one of them, which is at miot makpid, or you have rubo she'enu makpid, those are only gzera derabanan. So now you want to make gzera derabanan, to make gzera derabanan, and say that when it's miot and it's not makpid, we have neither of the items. You want to make gzera because you might come to the isur derabanan, which is only because you might come to the isur deoraita. That's two steps removed. And we never have a gzeira l'gzeira b'dinei derabanan. So now the next thing we move on to is mechitzot. By mechitzot, you said it was halacha l'moshe Mitzinai. Where it says again, d'oraita, that's explicit from the Torah. Damamar, aron tishat tfachim. The aron was 9 tfachim high. V'kaporet, the cover to the aron was a tefach. Harika nasara, you have 10 tfachim high, which is the shear of a mechitzah. Mechitzah, the minimum shear of a mechitzah is 10 tfachim high. So, according to this, we have it explicit in the Torah that Hashem's presence never came below the 10 tefachim, because it sat upon top of the kaporet to speak to Moshe, and from that we learn that it's a separate reshut up there. So that means that the reshut of the aretz only goes up to 10 tefachim high. So based on that, we know the din of mechitza, and we don't need the halacha l'moshe Mitzinai, where it says, lo, tzricha l'Rabbi Yehuda. We need it. We only need it for Rabbi Yehuda. Damar amad binyan bi'ama bat shisha. That when they built the Mikdash or the Mishkan itself, the structure was made up of amot that were 6 tfachim. Amad kelim ba'ama bat chamisha. When it comes to the amot of the kelim of the utensils used there, they were made up of 5 tefachim amot. Now the aron, the height of the aron is 1.5 amot. So now, if you think that the amot are 6 tefachim amot, then 1.5 is 9 tefachim, which is what we said before, and then 1 tefach of the kaporet. Other than if you think the kelim are made out of 5 tefachim amot, 1.5 amot is 7.5 tefachim, plus the one of the kaporet only gets you to 8.5 tefachim. So then we wouldn't know the din of mechitza of 10 tefachim, so that's why we need halacha Moshe Mishinai for Rabbi Yehuda. Ula Rabbi Meir damar kol amot ayu benonuyot. According to Rabbi Meir, it says that all the amot in the Mikdash were middle amot. Middle amot means 6 tefachim amot, because there's an amah that's smaller than that. That's the 5 tefach amah. And there are also amot that are bigger than that, which were used in the construction of the Mikdash to ensure that the artisans and the constructors of the Mikdash would repay the Mikdash more than they took. And therefore, to avoid any problems of Mi'ilah, they had an amah that exceeded the 6 tefachim amah that they use for measuring items, and the Mishnayot discuss when and where those were used. But the middle amah is the amah of 6 tefachim. According to him, you have the 10 tefachim, like the Meimar. So what are you going to do with him? He needs the, what was the halacha Moshe Sinai for him? Rabbi Meir, ki ata hilkota the gold, ulavud, uludofen akuma. Halacha Moshe Sinai comes to teach us these unique properties of mechitza. One of them is gold achit, that we say, or gold asig, which is another halacha, which means that when you have a portion of a mechitza, we say that we look at the mechitza as if it descends entirely. Or a good asik means that if we have a portion of a mechitza at the bottom, we see as if the mechitza climbs entirely. We'll see these halachot come up. We'll see them later in Erevin. They come up in Sukkah as well. That a partial mechitza that descends from a point or ascends from a point can then be considered to be a complete mechitza because we say good asik or good achit. That's number one. Lavud. Lavud is a principle, Allah the Moshe Mitzinai, that anything that is less than 3 tefachim is considered as if it doesn't exist. And that's what Rashi says, Lashon Lavud, Kmo Snif Tavar Katzar. It's like an addition or addendum to something small, Shosifu Allah Verichu, that they added on and extended it. So over here too, if you have 2 solid items and less than 3 tefachim between them, we assume the solid items are extended and they cover over that space. So anything less than 3 tefachim is considered as if it's not there halachically. That's also a Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai. And the last one is Dofen Akuma, which we discussed yesterday, which is that the walls of the Sukkah, the upright walls of the Sukkah, even if the ceiling or the Sukkah begins with Pasul Schach, or a roof itself, we consider that to be a part of the wall. It's as if the wall bent over, and the Schach that's in the middle is as if it's sitting on walls. Even though these walls are horizontal, not vertical, they're still considered to be part of the vertical walls, up to 4 Amot. And that din of Dofen Akuma is also Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai that even Rabbi Meir needs. He may not need the din of 10 tefachim by mechitza, but he needs these other halachot L'Moshe Mitzinai. Haya gvoa misrim amah. If it was higher than 20 amot, uba l'ma'ato. And he has to now reduce it in order to make it less than 20 amot so that the korah will be fine. Kama ma'at. How much does he reduce it? Mar says, kama ma'at. What's the question? Kama datzarechle. Whatever the amount you need to get it down, so there's only 20 amot in the halal of the mavoi, that's how much you have to lower the korah. What's the question about how much you have to lower it? You know what you have to get to, so that's how much you have to lower it. El rachbo bikamo. The question is not about lowering the korah, but what happens if you want to raise the ground underneath it? You want to elevate the ground underneath it to reduce the amount of space between the ground and the korah of 20 amot. How much of the mavoi do you need to raise in order for it to be considered a good korah? So that's Rav Yosef Amar Tefach. You only have to have an area of a tefach that you raise that it gets it to be 20 amot. Vayamar arba'at tefachim. You need 4 tefachim area that is that less than 20 amot away from the korah. So lema b'haka miflege. Let us suggest this is the machlok between Rav Yosef and Abaye. Demand Amar Tefach. The one who says tefach kasavar mutar lishtamesh takara korah. He believes that you can use underneath the korah. We look at the korah as if it is a mechitza. And we say the chodo achitzon, the outer edge of the korah, is as if it comes down and makes the mechitza over there. So according to Rav Yosef, it's the outer edge of the korah is where you end the area that you're allowed to carry. You're allowed to carry underneath of the korah. Therefore, in order for it to be a hekker, you simply need the tefach area underneath the korah, the tefach wide area underneath the korah, to be less than 20 amot, because you have the hekker when you enter underneath the korah. On the other hand, the one who says, you're not allowed to do or carry underneath the Korah. You actually only carry until the front edge of the Korah, because that's where we say it's sotem. That means that there's nothing underneath the Korah. So now we need a more significant area. As Rashi says, Kevin da fikte mitachat Korah. Since you took it out of the area that's underneath the Korah itself, tzarech she makom hanikar v'chashuv. It has to be a significant area, and it's something of significance is 4 tefachim. So therefore, Abaye requires 4 tefachim inside, and as you enter into the mavoi, that is less than 20 amot away from the Korah. The Gemara says, lo, the kuli alma kasavre mutar lishtamesh tachat Korah. Everybody agrees you can utilize underneath the Korah. This is what they argue about. How does the Korah function? Rav Yosef believes that a Korah is there just to make it noticeable that this is the end of the Mavoi. So there, it's enough to have 1 tefach wide under the Korah, because that's where you have the Heker, and that's sufficient. And that one holds that a Korah is functioning like a Mechitza, it's functioning like a 4th wall. And we know, as Rashi points out, a mechitza has to have a minimum of 4 tefachim in order to be classified as a mechitza. So over here, he'll need a space of 4 tefachim in order for it to be classified as a significant space to make the Korah itself function like a mechitza. V'bay Damon, others suggest this is the way the machloket lays out. Everybody agrees that the Korah is only there to give a person notice, to make it noticeable that this is the end of the mavoi. They're arguing about the difference between the heker being above and the heker being below. One says heker shomata ke heker shomalo. Just like above, the Korah is sufficient to be 1 tefach wide. So Rav Yosef said, just like the Korah only has to be 1 tefach wide, so too when you raise the floor, it also has to only be 1 tefach wide. And Abaye says, no, when it's above, that's something that catches your attention, a tefach is sufficient. But when you're raising the ground, you have to make it significant so that it catches someone's attention. And since tefach is not sufficient, you have to go to the next midah, which is 4 tefachim, where we find a halachic significance of an item. When you leave 1 tefach, that is 4 tefachim. Now everybody agrees that whatever is true by the Korah is true below when you raise the ground. And the fear here is whether it's going to get worn down. If you have only a tefach under the Korah that is raised, there is a likelihood that it will get worn down. Rav Yosef says, I don't worry about that. If it's there now, and it's functioning, it's fine. If it wears down, they'll replace it. Abaye says, I'm afraid it's going to get worn down, therefore I require 4 tefach space. Again, when you leave the area of a tefach, we move up to 4 tefachim. But we require at least 4 tefachim, so that way, even if a part of it gets knocked down, there'll still be a tefach that's raised within 20 amot of the raise, so that is only 20 amot between it and the Korah. And I give myself enough working room, 4 tefachim, so that if parts of it get worn down, there'll still be a tefach wide that is within 20 amot of the Korah. Okay, we'll stop over here.